Major funding for NJ Spotlight News is provided in part by NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, New Jersey Realtors, the voice of real estate in New Jersey. More information is online at njrealtor.com, and by the PSCG Foundation.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, plastic pollution in the state is the focus in Trenton on this Earth Day.
You get the money back, but you get that plastic out of the environment because it's killing us. And we have to recognize that finally, and that's why maybe the current recycling law is not enough.
As state leaders continue to combat the impacts of climate change in the Garden State, searching for a more sustainable future.
We need to show ourselves, and us in government, we must show the public that there is a pathway, an affordable pathway to a clean energy future, and there is.
Plus, 2 years in, the recreational cannabis business is cashing in, with some seeking to grow weed at home.
We are removing the stigma. Still ways to go, but just to see the progression from the initial to now has been very overwhelming.
And calls for housing, not handcuffs, are heard in Newark today as the U.S. Supreme Court hears oral arguments on whether removing the homeless from public property is cruel and unusual punishment. NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us this Monday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. It's the planet versus plastic this Earth Day, with organizers in New Jersey and across the country calling to cut plastic production by 60% in the next 20 years, partly because single-use plastics are everywhere, but also because researchers and scientists have now spent years documenting their harmful effect on humans and the environment, eventually breaking down into tiny particles that enter our bloodstream through drinking water, food, and even the air we breathe. That's caused some lawmakers in New Jersey to go back to basics when it comes to eliminating the pervasiveness of plastics, holding a rare joint session of the Senate and Assembly Environment Committees today to figure out what else New Jersey can do to rid itself of plastic pollution. Senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan reports.
Recycling is not working for plastics.
Senator Bob Smith says testimony today about plastic pollution's devastating impact on planet Earth and human health helped convince him Jersey needs to take drastic measures. And that includes resurrecting the controversial bottle bill, where folks collect on a refundable deposit when they return cans and bottles for recycling. It's a battle that's raged in New Jersey since the 1980s. But
I think we're going to have to consider the bottle bill, the 10% deposit. Sounds like the right thing to do.
Recycling is real, except for plastics.
Smith spoke after a panel of experts told a rare double hearing of Senate and Assembly Environment Committees that the plastic industry is trashing the planet, making 450 million tons of plastic a year currently. Unlike glass bottles or aluminum cans, most plastics too chemically complex to properly recycle, says former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Enk.
For 40 years, the plastics industry has said, don't worry about the massive amount of plastics we are producing. We can just recycle it. That turns out not to be true. Less than 10% of plastics are actually recycled.
She says New Jersey should keep collecting recyclables curbside, but also enact a bottle bill. It reduces street litter and raises the recycling rate in bottle bill states to 57%, compared to just 17% in states without refundable container laws. But a recycling industry rep argued hard against it, saying a bottle bill's too inconvenient for most folks and would siphon off revenues from recycling centers.
Imagine running any business and you have taken away from you 40% of your revenue. What you're going to do is put in jeopardy the entire recycling infrastructure of the state. We have put in place a very strong platform for total recycling. A bottle bill would take us backward.
But scientists researching the impact of plastics on human health told lawmakers they find it everywhere, as millions of nanoparticles invisible to the human eye. These microplastics have been connected to cardiac issues.
Plastic particles have been identified in the human lung, human liver, human kidney, urine, feces, heart, placenta, blood, and breast milk.
Researchers also claim certain plastic chemicals impact human hormones, increasing the chances of breast cancer and human infertility problems by reducing sperm counts.
They are disrupting our hormones and increasing our health risks.
A bottle bill is only one piece of these legislative reforms in the renewed war on plastics pollution. Others include waste reduction.
We need to have a broad strategy on reducing litter and waste, including evaluation of a bottle bill.
A group of environmental advocates want New Jersey to enact a skip the stuff law like New York City's, requiring diners to request takeout plasticware and to truthfully label plastics that are in fact unrecyclable.
There are solutions here today. We don't always have to wait for legislation to kick in, but we are going to fight, all of us together, to fight for those big state laws as well as skipping the stuff.
Lawmakers hope to meet again on these issues later this summer. In Trenton, I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
The Biden administration kicked off Earth Week by unveiling roughly $7 billion in grants to support more clean energy development, designating the money for solar expansion in low-income areas, which includes more than $150 million to New Jersey's Board of Public Utilities to prop up the work being done here. Renewable energy is seen as a key factor to mitigating the effects of climate change, which can be charted by rising sea levels and warming temperatures across the globe. Today, the State Department of Environmental Protection released a draft Extreme Heat Resilience Action Plan to help state agencies understand what they can and should do in an extreme heat event. Scientists say those are becoming more frequent throughout our region. Last year was the Earth's warmest on record since scientists began tracking it roughly 150 years ago. One way the state is trying to do its part is by transitioning to 100% clean energy by 2035, a big feat when you consider the hurdles. Here to talk about that and the rest of the state's plans is Department of Environmental Protection Commissioner Sean LaTourette. Commissioner, thanks so much for joining me. A lot to talk about with Earth Day and where the state sits right now and where leaders like yourself want to see it in the future. And I'm especially thinking about this transition to 100% renewable energy. Much of the state is still largely fueled by natural gas. Where do you see us in the next 10 years? Because there are pending proposals for new natural gas plants to come online. What's your stance on that? And where do you see us in the next decade?
So I see us in the next decade moving aggressively forward to embrace the clean energy future that is already under development here in the state of New Jersey. What we've been working on over the course of the last 6 years under Governor Phil Murphy's leadership is a number of initiatives to both plan to architect the clean energy future, but also to put in place the incentive programs and supportive regulatory reforms that will enable a continued transition. Because the truth is that we're all, whether we realize it or not, on the clean energy transition already.
What does that look like? Yeah.
What that means is we see private entities, right? We see private industry, we see utilities of varying sorts, including those with deep roots in the fossil fuel generation sector. Moving toward a clean energy future, is it all going as quickly as it needs to in order to blunt the worst experiences of climate change? No. I won't sit here on Earth Day and tell you otherwise. But what it requires is continued focus and commitment, continued focus upon and commitment to those goals. That means continuing to issue solicitations for offshore wind and solar projects, right? Continuing supporting the baseload clean power that already fuels New Jersey in the form of our nuclear facilities, and slowly transitioning off of natural gas. And I say slowly, in part because we have really old housing stock in the state of New Jersey. We can't flip a switch and turn off all natural gas immediately. It's going to take time.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the transition, and we've had that conversation before, you can't just take everything offline, switch to the new, whether it's natural gas or electric vehicles, plug-in electric vehicles. But when you think about the PVSC sewage plant, let's take, for example, in Newark, that proposal is still pending. It needs approval from your department. Folks have looked at that specifically as, if we are transitioning, why not make that one of the areas where, rather than bring a new natural gas power plant online? I mean, you've heard this argument over again. Where does that stand?
So that application is still under review by the Department of Environmental Protection and under consideration by the Passaic Valley Sewerage Commission, which, by the way, is not a state-controlled entity. It is a regionally controlled utility by 48 municipalities and counties up in that section of our great state. And there's only one entity that's going to determine whether or not that project remains under consideration. That entity is the PVSC itself. And if the project does continue under consideration, the DEP will ensure that, consistent with our environmental justice law, the facility reduces net impacts to that overburdened community. There's no question the environmental justice law requires that.
Just recently, the EPA not only finalized drinking water rules when it comes to forever chemicals, but also for the first time detailed two of the most common of those PFAS chemicals that are listed as a hazmat. I'm wondering what this means for New Jersey, and we have quite a few of those sites that have been identified, what it means for the cleanup and how those rules affect New Jersey.
So the short answer is not too much do they affect New Jersey. Why? Because once again, President Biden and Vice President Harris have taken a page out of Governor Murphy's playbook. New Jersey has led the nation in addressing PFAS contamination. Some of the science that was the basis of the recent announcements by the federal government started right here in New Jersey. And with respect to the federal listing as a hazardous substance under the Superfund law, we already have that here in New Jersey. PFAS, PFOA, PFNA, they're already hazardous substances under our New Jersey Spill Act, which was the basis for the Superfund law back in the 1980s. And so we're already well on our way to achieving control at environmentally hazardous sites all across the state that have PFAS concerns. Of course, it's a long road, right? We have a lot of cleanup to do within our environment, and we're going to seek to hold, or already, quite honestly, are seeking to hold the manufacturers of PFAS accountable. Right? We've sued, beginning in 2019, the major manufacturers of PFAS, and we will make sure that they do not leave the residents and taxpayers of the state of New Jersey holding the bag. We will make them clean up their mess.
Commissioner Sean LaTourette joining us on this Earth Day. Commissioner, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hundreds of thousands of Jews in New Jersey will begin celebrating Passover tonight. The holiday is a celebration of resilience, unity, and freedom, and it'll be particularly emotional this year amid ongoing tensions over the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza. At Columbia University today, all in-person classes were switched to virtual only following protests against the war in Gaza held both on and near the New York City campus over the last few days. The demonstrations led to the arrests of more than 100 students, including Jews, participating in the events. Many of those students say they've faced unfair repercussions for peacefully gathering at an encampment. Like Rutgers University, Columbia student protesters are calling on school leadership to divest all economic and academic stakes in Israel. But videos of anti-Semitic harassment by protesters outside school grounds also surfaced on social media this weekend. That drew condemnation from university and city officials. An Orthodox rabbi urged Jewish students to stay home out of concern for their safety. But the university's Hillel disputed that and is calling for increased protection for those on campus. It all comes as the U.S. House on Saturday passed a $95 billion bipartisan aid package. It'll give security help to both Ukraine and Israel. The Senate will begin considering the bill as early as tomorrow. Meanwhile, a 24-year-old North Plainfield man has been arrested and charged with a federal hate crime for allegedly vandalizing the Center for Islamic Life at Rutgers University. According to a complaint from the FBI, Jacob Beecher is in custody in connection to the crime that took place during the Eid holiday, marking the end of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. He was caught on surveillance video breaking into the center on April 10th around 2:41 a.m., damaging several religious items and other property totaling $40,000. Beecher is facing two federal charges, one count of damage to religious property and one count of making false statements to federal authorities. He denied that he broke into the center. The 24-year-old made an initial appearance today in Newark Federal Court and remains in federal custody. According to the Rutgers police, the investigation is still active. Additional state charges are pending. A case before the United States Supreme Court today could have sweeping implications for cities across the U.S., including in New Jersey, as justices wrestle with a set of Oregon laws that ban camping on public property like streets and sidewalks, benches and town parks, all in order to curb homelessness there. The high court will decide if arresting the unhoused violates the Constitution's Eighth Amendment, which bars cruel and unusual punishment, or whether being homeless constitutes a crime. Ted Goldberg reports from a rally in Newark.
Housing not handcuffs! Housing not handcuffs!
As the Supreme Court heard arguments about whether cities like Grants Pass, Oregon, can fine or arrest people for sleeping outside, protesters rallied against those kind of laws here in Newark.
The outcome will determine whether the United States will be a country that fines or arrests people for experiencing homelessness, or a country that invests in solutions.
The case before the Supreme Court was brought by two homeless people claiming removing, fining, or arresting the homeless from the streets was a form of cruel or unusual punishment.
We know what works. We know what success looks like. It's not locking people up. It's not fining them.
Advocates spoke in Harriet Tubman Square in Newark, a city that has drastically reduced homelessness, according to state data, without fining people or throwing them in jail.
This is a city that has seen a reduction in unsheltered homelessness of 57.6% because of the work that is being done in Newark.
Any way to avoid negative interaction with police and the community is important. In this case, being homeless is not something that may end up in a negative reaction.
As if they don't have enough challenges to get out of that cycle of homelessness and poverty, now you're going to add a criminal record onto that, making it more difficult for them to get housing, making it more difficult for them to get jobs.
And having a job isn't always enough to avoid homelessness.
I know what it feels like to sleep in Penn Station. I know what it feels like to get kicked out.
Keisha Llewellyn was one of today's speakers who hasn't been able to find a place to stay. Sometimes shelters don't have room, and other times affordable housing isn't so affordable.
So even though we say, okay, we give you affordable housing, how affordable is it? Because then the landlords could say, well, we don't want to take you.
Experiencing being homeless out on the street and then having to go to certain people houses and you gotta leave when they leave. Oh God. It hurts.
But will it be legal to ban or remove folks like this from the streets altogether?
This community, this city, is what it is because of every resident, whether you've got an address to put mail on or not.
People here say if the Supreme Court rules in favor of Grants Pass, Oregon, they'll take their fight to Trenton and argue there on behalf of the homeless. In Newark, I'm Ted Goldberg, NJ Spotlight News.
In our Spotlight on Business report tonight, cornering the cannabis market. Sunday marked the two-year anniversary of New Jersey's recreational cannabis sales. And since then, the market has ballooned from a few fledgling dispensaries across the state to more than 100, including recreational only, medical, and a combo of both. But as Melissa Rose Cooper reports, while that side of the industry is booming, support for home grow has yet to take off.
Watching it grow has been amazing. Like, I'm still in disbelief. Like, I can't believe that we're here. I can't believe we're doing it. It was just a dream. It was just something we talked about, and now it's here. So every day I wake up and I pinch myself, like, is this real? Like, are we really doing this?
Feelings of excitement Sharkana Paul still feels every day she walks through the doors here at Noir, the Maplewood cannabis dispensary she owns with her husband, Giovanni.
I'm going back when I was a kid thinking about marijuana and how it was illegal and you say no to drugs, to now know that it's legal and we're able to operate and sell. So it's an amazing feeling. It's still surreal, but exciting.
The couple opened the store in September, becoming the second Black-owned adult-use shop in New Jersey and the first to open in the northern part of the state.
I think it's awesome seeing that everyone is embracing it and welcoming the product. We're removing the stigma. Still ways to go, but just to see the progression from the initial to now has been very overwhelming.
And now Noir is joining dozens of other New Jersey dispensaries as they mark the second anniversary of recreational cannabis sales in the state.
I think it's a huge milestone that we're now 2 years into adult use cannabis sales in the state of New Jersey. The market is expanding. It still shows a lot of potential, and it's growing day by day. There's now 130 stores open, retail sites. More and more cultivators are opening up, and more manufacturers. So there's greater product diversity, more choices for consumers.
Jeff Brown is the executive director of the New Jersey Cannabis Regulatory Commission. He says the adult use market helped generate $1.3 billion in cannabis sales since launching 2 years ago, with $800 million in sales last year alone. And since the state began reforming cannabis in 2018, the industry has generated $2 billion with another $1 billion projected this year.
So our team is moving through license applications day by day, month by month. We've now received over 2,500 applications. Vast majority of those are for conditional licenses, which are a first step to get into the market. We've issued over 1,800 licenses, license awards, and about 500 of those are for annual awards, which would be for businesses to begin operation. So they would just need to pass a final inspection before they could begin operation.
But while many cannabis entrepreneurs are happy about the progress the industry has made, they say there are still a number of barriers they face trying to enter the market.
When you think about it on the licensing side, not only are you going through a rigorous application process with the Cannabis Regulatory Commission, you're also going through a rigorous application process with the municipality. There's also high competition. You're sort of like bumping shoulders with other hopefuls to be in this market, hoping you get that sort of like golden license, golden ticket to operate.
Precious Osai-Garese tried opening up a legal dispensary in her hometown of East Orange last year, but was denied a license. Although a disappointment, it forced her to pursue other ways of entering the market legally.
I said to myself, well, instead of having one dispensary, what are the products inside dispensaries? And I formed a pre-roll brand and I named it Precious because I wanted folks to remember that there are many different avenues to join cannabis. It's not just from being a license holder, but you can also be a brand. So instead of having one dispensary, I have a pre-roll product that'll be in most dispensaries in New Jersey launching in May.
But there's still at least one more avenue into the industry cannabis advocates want to be explored, the ability to cultivate at home. Senator Vin Kopal supports the initiative and says he's disappointed New Jersey has yet to adopt it.
Because the purpose of legalizing cannabis was done for social justice purposes. That's what everyone said the purpose was. So the optics right now is that it's being done to help a bunch of corporations when every other state in the union has legalized cannabis has a home grow provision, but we don't. That's pretty telling. That's pretty alarming. there's no reason not to start at least at medical patients. I mean, I think it's pretty unacceptable at this point.
As recreational sales increase, the CRC maintains they haven't forgotten about the medicinal community, implementing initiatives like in-person registration clinics to help people get signed up. And despite any challenges, business owners say they're looking forward to the continued expansion of cannabis in the state. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Melissa Rose Cooper.
On Wall Street, stocks bounced back today following the worst week of the year for markets. Here's the closing trading numbers for this Monday. And that does it for us tonight. But don't forget to download the NJ Spotlight News podcast so you can listen anytime. I'm Brianna Venosi. For the entire NJ Spotlight News team, thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you back here tomorrow night.
New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child. RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together. And New Jersey Realtors, the voice of real estate in New Jersey. More information is online at njrealtor.com.